everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Dana Trupiana, and I cover infamous gangsters every week in a true crime-like format. My show, Mob Times, comes out on Tuesdays. I've given up trying to tell you guys what time of the day it comes out. I don't know. I just put it out sometime Tuesday morning. Honestly, your best bet is to turn the notifications on so that you get alerted that my videos come out, because I really have no idea. Sometimes it's in Tuesday afternoon, sometimes it's early Tuesday, like 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. I really don't know. It comes out on a Tuesday, okay? I try. If I get it out on a Tuesday, I'm super happy. But yeah, the best way to be made aware that one of my videos came out is to put the notifications on that when my videos come out, you get notified, and you can always know as soon as I upload a video. So this intro is gonna be a little bit of a long one today. If you guys are not down for that, that is totally and completely 100% fine. And I'm gonna repeat what I repeat every single intro every single week. I have chapters in my videos. If you don't want to hear my chit chat, please go ahead and skip to the next chapter and we'll get right into this week's gangster. Today's gangster is actually a milestone for me. I've always said since I first started this series, podcast, channel, I really don't even know what this is, but ever since the beginning, I have always said that I refuse to cover a rat. This is a really significant episode because it's the first time that I'm gonna cover a bona fide rat. Angelo Leonardo flipped and became a government informant. You can literally read every single word of his testimony online. So the fact that I'm sitting here talking about him today means something big. I really did want to just skip him. I really did. I was like, no way. He ratted. I can't do an episode on him. I just can't. It's against my morals. But this guy's really interesting, okay? I had to do it. So I apologize to everybody that's going to be super upset about today's episode because it is a mafia rat. But we're still going to truck forward. So if you're somebody that is just so vehemently against informants that you cannot enjoy the episode, this might not be the episode for you. Honestly, sometimes covering a rat can be a lot of fun because this boy's whole life is just written out for you. It's all on the pages. You don't have to guess whether or not he was involved. You don't have to wonder what he was thinking, what he was feeling, what he did. He puts it all out there for everyone to see and understand, and he says it over and over again, so you know what it was going through his head. You know whether he did that crime or not. There's no guesswork. A huge reason that I wanted to cover him is because I've actually met a decent amount of the family members of his. And I have an interview with someone that I'll be dropping into this episode. I don't know if you guys remember when I put up a short telling you guys that I was in Cleveland, but this is what I was doing there. So now, many, many, many months later, you finally get to see all of that come together. Also, this is the time that I do want to mention that I do have a video about Angelo's father, Big Joe Leonardo, out already. It is linked in the description below. There are a few things that are going to be repeated in this video from that video, because like really, how could you possibly tell Angelo's story without going into Big Joe Leonardo's story? I feel like Big Joe Leonardo's story is kind of like Angelo Leonardo's villain origin story. Anyways, because Angelo is a rat, and because there's oh so much juicy information out there, and because I have interviews and pictures and an actual connection to this one, I've decided that this is going to be a few parts. I'm not sure yet if it's going to be 2 or 3. I did 4 for Carmine Persico, so maybe this one will be 4. Who knows? We're going to play it by ear, see how it goes. But it's definitely going to be more than one. I used to feel bad about doing like a part 1 and a part 2 and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? When I do multiple parts, you get all the information. You get down to the nitty gritty of the person. You get fun facts that a lot of people don't know about that person. I'll say some stuff that no YouTuber has ever said about that person that I'm covering. And I'll go over things that aren't on Google or Wikipedia. So I really, really hope that you guys enjoy my videos and you're down to go with me down a road that just kinda leads to wherever I'm interested. Because I really like the Cleveland family and the Cleveland Mafia as a whole. So we're going to be spending some time there. So if you're someone that is so against Mafia rats that you won't watch this video, that sucks because it is going to be a while. We're going to be here a while. So I hope that you can look past that for this and just go down this road with me because I'm excited about it. Obviously, when part one comes out, part two is not going to be available right away. Part two will be released exactly 1 week after part one, and from that point forward, not only will you find a link to part one in the part two video, not only will you find a link to part two in the description of the part one, but I set YouTube up so that it would automatically bring up part two when you were done watching part one. I set it up on YouTube so that when part one ends, the video is gonna automatically come up to bring you to part two. So if you click that, it's like we never stopped in the first place. This is extra cool for my people who listen to me while they're working, while they're cleaning, just doing busy work and need something to keep them occupied. If you're killing some time this week, I am more than happy to oblige you. I don't know what it is about the Leonardo family, but I've been reached out to so many times by so many family members. They've talked to me about how much they liked the video that I did on Big Joe. So because of that, I really do feel like they deserve a second video. Believe it or not, this is a really rare occurrence. I do have people here and there that have some long-lost relationship. They're the eighth cousin of some mafia member that I cover, which is awesome. I love hearing information like that. Like, I love talking to people who have relatives that I've covered. It's amazing. And a lot of times they know some information that I didn't know. But it's really, really rare. The other day, I had some dude, and like, of course it was on Facebook, but I had some dude comment on a video that I put up. And he told me that he was related to the person that I covered in that video. But he told me in the most condescending, pretentious way that, like, I literally didn't even want to have a conversation with him. If you guys have been here for a while, you know that I love to talk to people who have more knowledge than me or even different knowledge than me. So the fact that this dude offered to talk to me more and give me more information on somebody that I covered, but I said no, will tell you a lot about what an asshole this guy was. That makes me appreciate the Leonardo family even more. Because I have had, like, I'm not even exaggerating, I've had at least 4 or 5 different people from the Leonardo family reach out to me. And that's separate from the ones that I went and met in person and did interviews with in person. So the family and the peripheral people being so welcoming and nice and everything, it makes me appreciate them even more because I've never had one member of this family or anybody attached to the Cleveland crew at all be an asshole for absolutely no reason whatsoever. I don't know if it's like an Ohio thing, like people from Ohio are inherently nice, I don't know, but I like it, I like them, so they get more time. Hey everybody, my name is Dana Trupiana, and today I am here with Frank Leonardo. I wanted to have a conversation, and we're going to do an interview with him, which is really cool because this is my first interview, first collaboration on this channel. So I wanted to introduce Frank Leonardo, and Frank, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Dana. My name's Frank Leonardo. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I work with Minutemen Staffing. I'm married for 20 years. I have twin daughters that are 19 years old at Ohio State. And I'm a diehard Cleveland Browns fan.
Your father was Angelo Frank Leonardo, not Big Joe Leonardo's son, Angelo Leonardo. But your father was a criminal defense attorney, correct?
Correct.
Can you tell me a little bit about how he got there?
My father originally wanted to be a writer. He wanted to be a writer. He met my mom 51 years ago, and on their honeymoon, went to Europe, stayed there for about 3 months, wanted to be a writer. And it wasn't until my uncle, Big Ange, was being investigated and indicted that my grandfather, Frank Linardo, sent my dad's brother, Joe Linardo, to Greece to bring Angelo home, my dad, and say, you know what, we need more attorneys in this family.
Okay. So your father was living in Greece at the time?
He was at an extended honeymoon with my mom. So it was going on 2 months, and they said, enough's enough. Put the beret down, and we need attorneys. So he came here, came back, went to law school, and during that time, he was sitting first chair with Leonard Yelsky, who was a prominent defense attorney at the time. And my uncle was just indicted on racketeering and was looking at some jail time.
Right. So let me just clarify and just restate that. So your father was wanting to be a writer, and then because your uncle got in trouble, your grandfather sent your father to school to be a lawyer so that he could represent
Correct. So it's a good thing. Thank goodness my dad loved the law.
Yeah, it ended up that he liked
it. He put his writing to work in writing dispositions and closing arguments. He was one of the best attorneys in Cleveland.
That's amazing.
Okay, so this has been a very, very long intro, which is why in the beginning of the episode I said, hey, I have chapters, because I knew it was going to be a really, really long intro. But that's okay, because as I said, this is going to be a multi-part episode. If I don't get to a lot today, that's okay, because we'll put it in part two. And if we got to make a part three, we got to do that. That's fine. We got this. It's okay. So let's go ahead and get to the star of today's episode, Angelo Anthony Linardo. Angelo Anthony Linardo, popularly known as Big Ange, was born on January 12, 1911, in Cleveland, Ohio. His father, Joseph Linardo, also known as Big Joe, was the boss of the Cleveland family, and his mother, Concetta Schiano, was a badass homemaker. I love Concetta. We're going to talk about her a lot, but I love her. Angelo was the first child of his parents, and he would have 5 younger siblings. When he was born, his father was 26 years old, and his mother was 22. The parents had a second son, Joseph Linardo, in 1913, but he sadly didn't make it. Joseph passed away that same year. Next in line was Antoinette Linardo, and she was born in 1914. Then Frank was born in 1916, Dominic in 1920, and last but not least, Helen was born in 1923. His uncles were also very involved with the family business, so he grew up around a lot of family. Even his cousins got in on the action. The Cleveland Mafia was truly a family affair. Angelo began participating in the family's criminal activities when he was just a young teenager. Like, he was a kid when he got involved. He started his career as a runner, and he was moving cash, and he's moving messages among mafia figures. He's getting coffee. You know, picture the beginning of Goodfellas when you see him as a kid, and he's running around, and he's doing stuff for the mafia members. That's Angelo as a kid. He always wanted the mafia, and the mafia always wanted him. Knowing the kind of person that Angelo was, he established himself really fast as an honest and dependable kid that was gonna soon be promoted to additional jobs and more significant jobs, not just because he was a family member, not just because his dad was the boss, but because he had a really strong work ethic and was willing to do whatever he was asked to do. Mary Scalish grew up a fine woman, and Angelo Linardo, he knew it. She came from a large family, and she adhered to old world values. And that was something Angelo absolutely loved about her. Her father, Frank Scalish, and her mother, Margarita Zito, had 10 children together. These Italian families always have gigantic families, and it surprises me every single time. Like, 10 kids. That's a lot of kids. I'm an only child. My mom had 7 brothers and sisters, but geez, 10? She was the 8th child out of 10 kids, so right there, she's right in the middle. She was the second to last girl to be born. and her younger sister wasn't born until 1927. So, you know, she was the baby of the family for 6 years. She did have a younger brother, but the little girl in the family, there's always something special about the youngest girl in a family, and she had that for 6 years. But that didn't affect her personality. She was always one to reach out to people and check in on them. If they were sick, she would always reach out, see how they were feeling, send them food. She took care of her kids, and she protected them like a mother lion. And she even protected the kids in the neighborhood as if they were her own as well. Say what you will about Angelo, but Mary seems like a really amazing woman. They got married somewhere between 1943 and 1945. Try as I might, I could not for the life of me find the exact date that these guys got married. I don't know. It's not for lack of trying. I tried. I couldn't find it. Frank Scalish, her father, was 44 years old when Mary Elizabeth Scalish was born on December 18th, 1921. She was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and her mother, Margarita Zito, was 38 years old. So, like, yeah, they're a little bit older, but remember, they already have 7 kids before her. They are not new to this game. So, yeah, they're older, but they weren't old when they had their first kid. Mary also wasn't the only person in the family that would fall into the life of the underground world of Cleveland. Her brother, John T. Scalish, is known as the last great don of the Cleveland Mafia. Scalish was the boss of the Cleveland Mafia, and he remained the boss for 32 years. Another one of her brothers, Tommy, was also in the Mafia. And he was even rumored to be ahead of John, and he was supposed to become the leader of the gang. Unfortunately, he died at a really young age in a car accident, so he never got to realize his full potential. So it would end up being John that would step up to the task of boss of the family, but it was supposed to be Tommy. FBI files indicate that John Scalish inherited his position as boss of the family from Tommy, and that Tommy inherited the position from Al, Big Al Polizzi, which is a name that we're going to go over a lot today. Another one of the Scalish girls would go on to marry Milton Rockman, another very well-respected gangster in Cleveland's underground scene. Rockman was one of the Jewish boys that we're going to go over later, but he's very involved in this whole case as well. So, as I said before, Angelo did have 2 brothers, Dominic and Frank, and they were not members of the Mafia. It's theorized that they had money from the Cleveland Mafia behind them, but they were in the bail bonds business, so they were not outwardly appearing as members of the Cleveland Mafia. So while Mary and her family were all mixed up in it, it doesn't appear that all the Leonardos were. His brother Frank would go on to have a son, and he would name his son Angelo. And Angelo had a son who he would name Frank. And this is super confusing because Italians always do this. They name their kid either the name of their brother or their father, and you get all kinds of mix up. But this Frank is the person that I actually got to have an interview with, and it's going to be in this episode. But interesting interjection, we are so far away from this point, but I do want to bring it up right now just because we're talking about Frank. So Frank's son, Angelo, wanted to be a writer, but he ended up becoming a lawyer so that he could defend Big Ange when he was brought up on charges. We'll get into the whole nitty-gritty of that later on, but I thought I would just mention that the Leonardo family is still alive and well in Cleveland, and even though they're not involved in the Mafia anymore, they definitely remember and respect the mark that their family made on the city's history. Okay, guys, so before we get into Angelo's life, we should take a look at the name Big Joe Leonardo. There was a lot more to him than being the father of Angelo Leonardo. Again, I'll tell you, I do have an episode on Big Joe, and I'll put it in the description, but I am going to go over him here because it's absolutely pertinent to know this information, and I don't expect you guys to watch the Big Joe episode before this one, so we're just going to go through it here. Big Joe Leonardo was born in Licata, Italy. He had 3 brothers, and his father worked at the sulfur mines. The Perello family is another family that was born in Licata, Italy. That family had a total of 7 boys, and their father worked at or ran or owned something with the sulfur pits. So that whole family that has 7 boys in it, their father is involved in the sulfur pits as well. So because these two families are filled with sons and both of their fathers are working at the sulfur pits, the families end up being really close and they grew up together. So the Leonardo sons grew up with the Perello sons. Big Joe Leonardo made the voyage to America in 1901, and the Perello boys followed closely behind, and they all ended up staying in New York and settling in Little Italy in New York. It wasn't surprising that when, in 1905, Big Joe Leonardo made the decision to head to Cleveland, Ohio, the Perellos ended up following closely behind, and they just regrouped and continued operations there. Now, again, this is something that I do talk about in my Big Joe Leonardo video. That is the last time I'm going to say this. So there's going to be information that I talked about there. I'm not going to keep saying it over and over again. So if you guys want to go watch the episode on Big Joe Leonardo, I'm not going over every single thing here. There's so much information in that episode that I'm not going to go over here. So if you watch all the parts of Angelo Leonardo and you still want to know a little bit of information, you want to know the prequel, go check out that episode. Very, very interesting. But I'm not just going to keep saying, oh, I said this in my Leonardo, but that's it. I'm done. We're going to discuss it here as well. If you read up on Big Joe, you're going to read about how Big Joe Leonardo is a legitimate businessman. And he goes out and he sells fruit at a commission house. And he becomes so successful at this, at selling fruit from a cart, that this dude becomes rich. Leading up to Prohibition being enacted, his riches lead him to become involved in Prohibition and become the leader of a gang in Cleveland that represented La Cosa Nostra influence in the area of Cleveland, Ohio. I want to stop right here and pose a few questions for you. Number one, how many fruit vendors do you know that are rich? And not only that, but they became rich by selling fruit from a cart in the early 1900s, 1910s. Number two, how many men have you heard of going from completely straight and narrow to running a mafia gang in one day? Like, if you believe what's written about Big Joe online, he was just a stand-up businessman, and then one day he just decided, you know what would be fun? Having a whole gang. Let's go out and do that. How often do we hear that? And number three, how many men that are completely stand-up business guys and have no associates that are criminals, none whatsoever, how many of those guys do you know that have enough associates to start up a gang in one day? Like, somebody that's straight and narrow, you don't know enough people that would be willing to be criminals to start a gang in one day. I think the entire idea is just beyond asinine. I don't know how they can even write it and not feel stupid writing it. That's all to say that no, Big Joe Leonardo was not some stand-up businessman who got rich selling fruit from a cart at commission houses. Like, no, that's not what happened. I would be willing to bet my last nickel that not only had Leonardo been in the mafia since he was a kid, Big Joe Leonardo, not only had his entire family of siblings been in the mafia since they were kids, not only had the seven Perello boys also been in the mafia since they were kids, but that their fathers were in the mafia too. It's not a coincidence that they were working at the sulfur mines in Licata that just so happened to be controlled by the mafia over in Sicily. So I don't think this is a surprise turn of events. It's even stupider that they report that this guy was like a stand-up businessman when you hear about the kind of shit that he was doing between when he got to America in 1901 and when Prohibition is about to start in 1919. So we've got an 18-year period here. It's not that long. In 1906, Leonardo is arrested for aggravated assault for stabbing someone, and he spent 22 months in the Ohio State Reformatory. That would put him getting out at around 1908. As soon as he got out, I'm talking like almost immediately upon walking out of the jail, he's accused of robbery, but charges were never officially brought against him. So like this man literally walked out of the jail and robbed the house that was standing outside the jail. Like he wasted no time. In 1916, he got into an argument with somebody that ended up with him shooting and killing the man that he got into an argument with. When he was brought in front of a grand jury, they declined to charge him since the evidence that they had against him was, again, insufficient. Talk about a Teflon Don. Now, police are looking from the outside in, and they see a huge amount of robberies that are starting to stack up around this organization that Leonardo is involved in, slash created, slash running. The Mayfield Road Mob, if I haven't mentioned that yet. That's the name of this gang that he created in one day with no criminal associates. They're fingering him and his crew for robberies left and right, but let's face it, they've come at him with four different things, and of those four things, they've only been able to nail him on one. And the one thing that they got him on, it wasn't even murder. So let's be real here. What is happening? Is it that police are really just so stupid and inept that they're unable to put a case against these guys? No. It's that the organized crime syndicate and high-level associates that Leonardo is a part of is getting to the members of the grand jury before he can be indicted. They're getting to the witnesses. They're getting to the evidence before it can be presented. They're just able to stop everything in its tracks before it even gets to court. So, okay, we've established that this family has a long history in the mafia, and we've established that Big Angie's daddy, Big Joe Leonardo, has been running with them boys since he learned to talk. We are pretty comfortable with those facts. Now, let's take a look at what goes on during Prohibition. While the rest of the mafia, well, honestly, while the rest of the criminals in America, like, let's be real, if we're being honest, every single person that ever did anything illegal in their life got in on this, but right now we're just honing in on the mafia. So while the rest of the mafia is out there and they're producing, selling, transporting, storing, doing all the things with illegal alcohol, what is Big Joe doing? He decided that he was going to get involved in Prohibition, but he was going to do something completely legal. He decides that he's going to start to develop one of the key ingredients that is absolutely integral in making this illegal alcohol, but is still completely legal to produce: corn sugar. He opens a confectionery, and when Salvatore Black Sam Todaro comes over to America from Licata, he sets Todaro up to run ship. Todaro was another really good friend of Leonardo's that he had from back in Licata, Italy. So it's a no-brainer that as soon as Todaro got to America, he was immediately put into a high position of power and a high level within the Mayfield Road Mob. So at this point, the Mayfield Road Mob's top tier of gangsters are Sam Todaro, the seven Perello boys, the other Leonardo boys, and right under Todaro is one of Big Joe's favorite people in the whole world, Frank Milano. The Mayfield Road Mob, or the MRM as I'm going to start calling them because it's a freaking mouthful to say the Mayfield Road Mob, and you wouldn't think that you mess it up as many times as you do, but try saying it five times fast. So the MRM, they got into the business of bootlegging after a while, but they did it in the smartest way possible. They would go around and find poverty-stricken immigrants within their neighborhood, and they would lend them money, with an interest rate, of course. And they would give them money and say, hey, go and get all the stuff that you need to make illegal alcohol. Then the MRM would sell them the materials, mainly the sugar that they needed to produce the alcohol, which just ensured that they always had a place to sell the sugar that they were making. After this poverty-stricken immigrant would produce the alcohol, the MRM would then purchase the alcohol back and sell it to local speakeasies and restaurants at a much higher rate. Leonardo effectively took over every aspect of illegal alcohol production in Cleveland, and he built a loyal base of admirers, employees, just a whole base of people that were fully on board for him. They loved this man. Because the people that he's making the loans to, they are poor. I'm talking like can't put food in their children's mouths poor. And by giving them the loan to get started with the alcohol production, they made money after a while. Like, yeah, they had to pay their loan back, but they made money from making the alcohol. So he is a god to these people. He is a savior. On the road through the murky waters of what would one day become the Castello-Morisi War in New York, Big Joe becomes best friends with Salvatore D'Aquila. D'Aquila was the capo di tutti capi in New York, and he is a very, very powerful ally to have. And the backing of New York has a huge effect in strengthening the position of the MRM. And this is just yet another thing that I use to prove that Leonardo was never a straight, legit businessman before Prohibition or before the Mayfield Road Mob, before any of that. Because how would he know De Aquila? Like, think about that. How could he possibly get close with De Aquila? The only way that he would have known him and been able to form a close relationship with him is if he met him and got close to him when he first got to America when he was living in New York. If he was a legit businessman, then why in 1905, because we know he only lived in New York from 1901 to 1905, why would he have known De Aquila in 1905? De Aquila had always been in the mafia. He hadn't been the Capo di Tutti Capi forever, but he had always been a high-ranking member in the mafia. So you can't tell me that if you're associates with him, you're not somehow involved. He was in the Black Hand. And I'm assuming Big Joe Leonardo was probably in the Black Hand as well. These are just things that I want to bring up to challenge the public opinion and the public knowledge, because everything, when you Google it, when you look him up, everything says he was straight and narrow. No, he wasn't. So now, as Prohibition goes on and he starts to stack money up, with more money comes more problems. The biggest problem that he ran into was that his friends, the Perellos, had split off and began their own gang after they dealt with the greediness of Leonardo for too long, in their perspective. Sam Todaro, his top guy for like most of the time that he's been in America, is broke as a joke. Like, this man does not make any money, and he's the head of the operation. Imagine the financial status of another foot soldier or any of the Perellos that weren't Joseph Perello, because Joseph Perello was one of the people that were like leading his distilleries and stuff like that. But there's seven of these guys and not all of them are in leadership positions. So pretty much the point is Big Joe is greedy. Nobody wants to work for him because they're poor if they work for him. And the Perellos ended up going out on their own. So the Perellos, they go and they start their own gang down the block, doing exactly the same thing that the MRM is doing, but paying the people that they work with a whole lot more. The second that the Perellos walked out, Leonardo lost a huge chunk of money just from the customers that would follow the Perellos and no longer work with him anymore. Plus the fact that he's going to have to replace them all. So it's a lot of money that he's going to lose now that the Perellos decided to go out and do their own thing. And Leonardo is somebody that was known to go around and kill the competition. He would kill anybody that was in the same line of work as him because he viewed them as competition. Additionally, he had a little bit of an attitude problem and he got really stuck up when his station in the world improved. But as stuck up as he was not above stacking bodies up for anybody that he viewed as competing with him. However, interestingly enough, when the Perellos decided to go out and do their own thing, Big Joe did not issue a kill order for any of them. And he didn't go after them himself, which is very like off-brand for him. Like everybody expected him to go after them and he didn't. Everybody was waiting for it. Everybody was expecting Leonardo to either go himself and kill these guys or to issue a hit out on them, because Leonardo would literally, like, if there was a guy on the corner selling, like, I don't know, the equivalent of alcohol of, like, dime bags, like a nobody bootlegger, Leonardo would kill them. So the fact that the Perellos are going out and not only leaving his organization, but now becoming his biggest competition, and then he does nothing about it, it's very weird. Nobody really knows what's going on. Nobody understands why they're still alive. Surprisingly, he kind of took them going out on their own on the chin. No threats were made. No bounties were placed. He just kind of pretended it didn't happen. Like, obviously, he had to replace everybody and he had to find a new person to run everything because Joseph Perello was running everything. But outside of that, nobody heard a word about the fact that the Perellos had left. It's very hard to find information on why he didn't go after them. But I'm going to talk a lot about why I believe he didn't go after them. And I think there's a whole bunch of reasons that are just rolled up into one and he just kind of knew better. One of the main reasons is that Big Joe is now starting to inherit problems with Joe Masseria. Masseria was very well known for starting beef with not only his enemies, but any friend of his enemies. So it's more than likely that with Masseria being such a huge influence in New York, the Pirellos are just not on the top of Big Joe's priority list. He would have inherited beef with Masseria because Masseria is now starting to go to war with D'Aquila. Because D'Aquila is the Capo dei Tutti Capi, Masseria wants that position, he's been vying for power, he's been in the mafia for a very long time. So now, because Masseria is going at D'Aquila, he's not just going to go at D'Aquila, he's going to go at everybody that's friends with D'Aquila. And as I said before, Big Joe Leonardo would be one of D'Aquila's biggest supporters. Also, I feel like a huge reason that the Pirellos ended up going out on their own in the first place was because Masseria helped them. I don't see that written anywhere. That's just my own personal opinion. I really feel like that happened. It seems like such a Masseria move. If you're trying to take down an empire, what's the quickest way to do that? Take out the top tier of leadership in that empire. And the Pirellos were a huge part of the leadership of the Mayfield Road Mob. If Masseria could convince them to go out on their own, that Big Joe is so bad, it would be a huge hit to Leonardo's operation, and he knew that. In turn, if the Pirellos had the backing of Masseria, that would be a huge reason why Leonardo wouldn't go after them. You gotta remember, this is Cleveland. They don't really want that smoke. They don't want bodies dropping on the streets. They don't want to go to war. Big Joe doesn't really want to be the flame that ignites the Casella-Morisi War. He doesn't want that. So as I said, I don't see it written anywhere, but it's always been my personal opinion that Masseria stepped in and talked the Pirellos into going out on their own. I'm going to talk a little bit later about the documentary Sugar Wars, but I do have to interject here really quick about that. The documentary Sugar Wars got quite a few things wrong, but the biggest thing that I saw that they got wrong was when they said that Big Joe gave the green light for the Pirellos to go out on their own and open a sugar empire on their own. Let's just sit back and think for a second. Let's sit back and think if that fits Big Joe's personality. If a two-bit, nothing bootlegger from down the street takes 1 cent from Leonardo, he has him whacked. So knowing that, do you really think that Big Joe threw a smile on his face and went to the Pirellos and told the Pirellos, while Joe Pirello was his right-hand man and running half of his empire, that they could go and open a gang that would be doing the same exact thing that he's doing and taking half of his revenue away? How stupid do you have to be to think that that's what happened? I know, like, Sugar Wars is this legit documentary, and it's amazingly done. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. But they're wrong. That was wrong. There's no way in hell Big Joe gave the go-ahead for that. No way. I honestly never even knew that that was a thought, that Big Joe okayed the Pirellos going out on their own. So I never really dug too deep into the theory because I didn't watch Sugar Wars when I was preparing to do the Big Joe episode. I only watched it to get ready for this episode because I figured there was some information in there that I needed to see. But I never went and did like all kinds of research into whether Big Joe gave the green light to the Pirellos because it's such a stupid thought. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So anyway, we are operating on the theory that Joe Masseria went to the Pirellos and talked the Pirellos into going out on their own and leaving Leonardo's organization against Leonardo's wishes. But because he knows that they have the backing of Masseria and Masseria is very strong, he's not going to go after them and try to kill them. When the Pirellos left Big Joe, they opened their own place on Upper Woodland Avenue around East 110th Street. This all happened in 1926, so right smack dab in the middle of Prohibition. It's not even like, well, maybe Prohibition had ended, so it wasn't that big of a deal if they went out on their own, and they're not really making that much money for him anymore. No, we are still in the middle of Prohibition. You cannot convince me that the Pirellos leaving was okayed by Joe. Can't do it. The final nail in the coffin in the relationship between Big Joe Leonardo and the Pirello brothers was when one of the Pirello boys got jammed up and arrested and sent to jail. Since the Pirellos knew that Big Joe has the highest connections, he has connections with the lawyers and the congressmen and everything, they reach out to him for help. They come to him, hat in hand, and they're like, listen, Raymond got arrested. We're doing absolutely everything we can, but nothing we're doing is working. We need your help. So they go to him and they pretty much have to eat shit. Leonardo does not pass up this chance to brag and boast and is like, well, if you hadn't have left my magical kingdom, maybe this wouldn't have happened. And then if it did happen, I would have done it for free. But because you did, I'm going to charge you. You want me to get your brother out of jail? Fine. I want $5,000. So Joseph Perello, he's like, all right, like I've already dumped tens of thousands of dollars into lawyers and everything else I could do. It hasn't worked. $5,000 is nothing. Here you go. He hands it to Leonardo and Leonardo pretty much says, all right, I'll handle it. The Perello boys, they're like, all right, like that was the worst thing we've ever had to do in our entire lives, but we did it. It's done. He's going to handle it. But the days start going by and there is no word of Raymond getting out of jail. Like, absolutely nothing. Complete silence. Crickets. There's nothing. So Joe Perello is like, all right, I'm gonna go figure out what the hell is going on. I don't know why he's still sitting in jail. So he goes over there, and lo and behold, Big Joe Leonardo is gone. He fled the country. He didn't really flee the country. He went to Italy, but he would spend the next year and a half in Italy. So he took this $5,000 that was given to him to get Raymond out of jail, didn't get Raymond out of jail, and kept the $5,000 and jetted off to Italy for a year and a half. So now this is a huge deal. Joseph is pissed. Raymond is sitting in jail. And now it is on. The Perellos want blood. Joe Perello wants all that smoke. So what does he do? He goes around to all the people that Leonardo had made loans to so that they could open up their own distilleries and everything. And he tells them, like, hey, I know that Big Joe is buying the illegal alcohol back from you. How about this? I will pay you double to get that illegal alcohol. So instead of going with Big Joe's gang, let me purchase it. And then he goes to the restaurants and the bars and the speakeasies that Big Joe sells to. And he tells them, like, hey, I'll sell it to you for cheaper. At this point, he has taken over half, over 50% of Big Joe's territory. His income has just been cut in half because he wanted to take that $5,000 with him. And honestly, what can Leonardo do? He's in Italy for a year and a half. Another really big move that Perello makes and just shows that he wants all the smoke, he wants all the beef, is that he poaches Todaro. Remember Sam Todaro, Big Joe's friend from back in Licata, who had come to America and gone straight to Leonardo, gone straight to being in charge of the MRM? Well, Todaro jumps ship and he goes over to the Perello gang. When Leonardo got back to America, he was so pissed that Todaro had left his gang that he put out a hit on Todaro. Nobody actually ends up killing Todaro because everybody, even in his own gang, they're like, no, this is a bad idea. And he won't listen to anybody, but everybody's telling him, like, it's a really, really bad idea to even try to kill him. So finally, Nicola Gentile, which is another, like, gigantic name in the mafia scene, pretty much gives Leonardo an ultimatum. He goes to him and he's like, hey, one of two things are going to happen here. Either you're going to give up the hit on Todaro, or I'm out. I'm leaving your gang. I'm leaving your life. We are not friends. We're not boys. I can't do this anymore. Give it up or I'm out. So this finally gets through Big Joe's big, fat, thick skull, and he rescinds the hit on Todaro. On October 13th, 1927, Todaro hits up Leonardo around 8:15 at night, and he's like, hey, buddy, what's up? Listen, I know that we've been in negotiations for a while. I know we're trying to bring peace. You don't want beef with the Perellos. We're in the mood to talk. Come to Ottavio's barbershop. We'll talk and we'll make peace between our gangs. So Leonardo takes his brother, Joseph, who had been running the gang while he was in Italy, and goes to the barbershop at 10902 Woodland Avenue. Big Joe does not have any bodyguards on him, which is probably the first time that anybody had ever saw a Big Joe without any bodyguards. But his bodyguards had recently been arrested and were currently in jail. So it made sense that he wouldn't have any guards with him. They were in jail for the murder of Ernest J. Yorkel and Jack Brownstein, two of the biggest morons, stupidest kidnappers in the whole world. These two are people that kidnap gangsters and then ransom them. So these two morons get to Cleveland and they go around and they're bragging that they're planning to kidnap Big Joe. And Big Joe is like, listen, I don't even want to deal with this. Like, I don't want to have to kill them when they come. Just go take them out. So he tells his bodyguards to go take out these two morons. So that's what his bodyguards go and do. They don't sit around and wait for these two idiot kidnappers to come and attempt to kidnap Big Joe. They just go and preemptively take him out, which is fine and everything, but the police know that it was him because these morons are going around town telling everybody that they're going to kidnap him. So obviously, who are they going to finger when these guys show up dead? The bodyguards of Big Joe, right? So now everybody knows that Big Joe's bodyguards are not around. Todaro knows this when he makes this phone call. But Leonardo grew up with Todaro and the Pirellos. And Leonardo didn't put out any hits when the Pirellos left him. He rescinded the hit order on Todaro. And he thinks he's safe enough to go have this meeting because he really has been in peace talks and trying to make peace for a while now. So they show up at the barbershop. Angelo Pirello goes outside. He invites him in. He says, hey, come on in. They sit down. John and Joseph Leonardo go into the back room of the barbershop where they sit around and play cards and hang out. And while they're sitting there waiting, two dudes come out of the back room of the barbershop and open fire, killing Joseph Leonardo immediately. That's another thing that Sugar Wars got wrong. They said that Leonardo chased them down. It was his brother that chased them down. Leonardo was shot twice in the head, three times in the left shoulder and upper arm, and two times on the right side. Killed him instantly. He did not move. John was not killed immediately. He was shot in the left leg and in the stomach, but he survived. After the shooting was done, the two men that had the guns, they run out the front door and John chases after them, shooting. While John is chasing these gunmen, I guess like a little light bulb goes off above the shooters' heads and they're like, wait, why are we running away? We came here to kill these guys. So they stop in front of a butcher shop next door, waited for John to reach them. And when John reached them, the gunman, he pistol whipped and knocked out John. John fell on the ground and bled to death on the sidewalk in front of the butcher shop. Once again, Sugar Wars says that it was Joe that chased him out and died on the sidewalk outside. It wasn't. It was John that died outside on the sidewalk. Big Joe was killed in the barbershop. So, as I said, I really liked the documentary Sugar Wars, but it's just, there's certain things that they got wrong. They didn't get every single thing right, and I feel like it probably should have been researched a little better, but whatever. It's still an amazing documentary, so you can't really complain about it. It's really good. If you guys are interested in this case and you want to know more, I suggest going to watch it. I watched it on Amazon Prime for free, so really good movie. Okay, so as I said in the beginning of this episode, I knew that there was no way that I was getting through this episode in one part. Honestly, I kind of think that it's going to be at least three parts, maybe even four, but we'll see how things go as time progresses. It's kind of just wait and see kind of thing. Either way, I'm going to end this part here because we've gotten through the whole Big Joe Leonardo recap and we're already getting into a very long episode right now. And I feel like when I hit a certain time, no matter how interested you are in a subject, anybody's attention span is just going to drift off into Never Never Land. And I really like this stuff. I think it's really, really interesting and I would hate to see that happen. So thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Even if you did watch my episode on Big Joe Leonardo, I hope that you learned a thing or two in this episode and that you make sure to come back for the next part. I hope you guys have an amazing week, and I can't wait to see you next week for part two on Angelo Big Ange Leonardo. Please don't forget to like, share, subscribe, follow, comment, do all the things, and I'll see you next week. Bye!